Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Kuf Yud Daled Amud Bet, the last line. Ibaylu, hechzika hi milchama bolam mahu. What's the din in this case? So here, she establishes for us the fact that there is a war going on. Without her telling us this, we would not have had this information. The information is being provided to us by her. So we have a similar concept other places in Shas, which is pesha asur, pesha hitir. Without her, we wouldn't have known this information. She provides us information that is to her detriment, but we wouldn't have known it without her. So then, do we give her some sort of the benefit of the doubt because she gave us the information? Because if she didn't say milchama, she would be trusted about the death of her husband. If she says milchama, she's no longer trusted about the death of her husband. So here, she's giving us information that's actually to her detriment. Mi amrinin mala l'shaker. Why is it worthwhile for her to lie? Di baya amra shalom ba'olam. Because if she really wanted to, she could have just told us there was peace in the world, told us her husband died, and she'd be off the hook. So now the fact that she gave us this extra information that there was a war, for that, do we now downgrade her testimony, even though she's the one providing it? Odilma, kevin dichzaka amra b'dedami. Once she establishes for us the fact that there was a war, then she's under the normal considerations of war, which is people don't make the correct assumptions there or correct assessment because they don't wait until the last minute. They assume was what happened and not the actual facts. And Mali Shakar doesn't come back and ruin the chazoka that we have here. The chazoka that in wartime people don't make the correct assessment. That a woman in wartime makes assumptions, comes to conclusions without the proper evidence. So do we say that's the same thing here? Or is Mali the Shakar strong enough to overcome that problem? Now, as Tosafot points out, Mali the Shakir is a broader question throughout Shas, which is amigo. Amigo is that we say that if a person comes and tells us information, and if they were to lie, they would have had a better lie. So you give them the option, they come here and give you certain information, and we say, are they telling the truth or are they telling a lie? We say, well, if they wanted to lie, they should have done a much better job at it. They should have gone ahead and told this story instead of this story. The only problem here is that by the woman coming to testify, we don't assume that she is lying. We assume that she's telling the truth in all cases. But the question is how much evidence she has to back up what she thinks is the truth. In one case, she tells us the truth because she has absolute certainty about the truth. In the other case, she's telling us the truth. It's just that she made assumptions about the conclusion of the scenario because she wasn't there. But because of the circumstances, she assumed I'd given you this information. So how can you say Mali the Shak over here? We don't suspect the woman of lying here at all. None of the situations do we suspect her of lying. We just suspect her of not being so careful about the conclusion that she drew, but not that she would lie intentionally about this information. Tosafot says, what type of Mali the Shak is this over here? Because her other option is not really to lie over here. If that's not the other option, then how can you say Mali the Shak? So Omari, came to Daika Kulihai, Sheikh Zika Milchama Beulam. Tosafot gives a different way to view this is, the Gemara's question is this. The fact that she's coming with such precise information that there is a war, which we didn't know about, so maybe she's also precise about the death of her husband. So that's the Mali L'Shakar over here. Had she not said anything about the war, we would have believed her. Now that she comes back and gives us such meduyak and precise information about there being a war, maybe we should believe her testimony now that she doesn't make assumptions and doesn't draw conclusions, but rather is very careful about what she saw. So do we extrapolate the fact that she added this information about the milchama to the death of her husband and say, just like here she caught every detail, so do over there she caught every detail? Or do we say, no, this is subject to the normal rules of war, and the normal rules of war, people come to conclusions without seeing the facts, and therefore over here too. Just because she tells us there's a war doesn't mean that in the end, she had all the data about her husband. She simply saw him in a predicament that she presumed he's definitely dead. Tashma. So Gemara says, Ishinu aleinu bayit, Ishinu aleinu ma'ara. They smoked us out of the house, or they smoked us out of the cave. This was a common practice of the Romans. In the time of the Bar Kokhba revolts, they were hiding out in caves. So they couldn't get to the people in the caves. It was too dangerous to send soldiers into the caves. So they used to smoke them out of the caves. They used to light a fire at the entrance of the cave, which would suck out all the oxygen from the cave, and that would force them to come out of the cave. So that's why they always had a second opening in the cave to prevent that. But if they found both sides of the cave, they were able to do that, or on the sides of mountains, they would lower down troops and light fires so that they could smoke them out of the cave. So who made Vanitsalti? So the woman says, my husband died, but I came out okay. Ain't a nemenet. She's not believed over there. She's not believed because shiny hotam. Damar la, because we can say to her, Keheche dilidach itrachesh nisa. Just like for you, it was miraculous that you were able to escape. I mean, why does she assume that she escaped and nobody else from the cave escaped? The didei nami itrachesh nisa. She had to make an assumption that she got out miraculously, however it was, she got out of the cave. But the rest of the parties in the cave were smoked out and they died from the smoke inhalation. So there's no way anybody got out of there. I happened to scoot out and make it out whatever way she did, but nobody else made it out alive. So we can say back to her, just like you made it out, so too someone else could have made it out, and that could have been your husband, so we don't know for sure that he's dead. Tashma. Naflu aleinu ovdei kochavim, naflu aleinu listim. We were caught up by bandits, or by robbers, marauders attacked us. Who made? Vinitzalti. He died, but I was saved. Ne'emenet. She is believed in that case. Now the view of these marauders or bandits that attacked them is like what we call milchama ktana. It's a small war, as opposed to a large-scale war that we've been talking about till now. The Gemara views this as being a small-scale war, where it involves just the parties, the people being robbed, as well as the marauders themselves. But the marauders are acting like you would in a war where they're going to kill the people who are there. So she says, he died, but I was saved. I escaped from their attack. There she's believed. So why is she believed over there? Sounds like in Zman Milchama, she tells us about the Milchama. How do we know about the war here? Because she tells us they were robbed. They were plundered by these group of individuals. So she's the one giving us the information, and yet we're believing her about the death of her husband. Hotam k'ravidi. Over there, it's like ravidi, from the Gemara of Bodhisattva, dem ravidi, isha klezayna lea. That a woman wears her weapon. So that the woman has an ability to escape in these situations because of the fact that she is a woman. Whether the fact that she's a woman is enough to get her to escape, or the fact that because she's a woman, she can entice them and get herself out of the problem through other means, and therefore she has the ability to survive. Why is that important? Because until now, our assumption is that the woman doesn't stay around to see the death of her husband, because it's too dangerous for her to remain in the place where her husband was wounded, injured. In the case before, he was hit by arrows, he was hit by spears. Or in the case where she sees him with a bunch of people that died, for her to remain there is very risky, because as Tosafot mentioned in yesterday's daf, she could be collateral damage to the war that's ongoing over there. They're throwing over catapult stones. If she stays there, she could be killed by just simply remaining there. So therefore, she will not risk her life to see the death of her husband all the way through to the end, because she can't stay around. It's too risky for her to be there at that point in time. What the Gemara is saying over here is that she will stay till the death of her husband, because she doesn't fear the bandits or the marauders over here. She thinks that she can get away, or she has her own protection, and she can walk away from this situation without being caught up in whatever is going on. So because of that, she sticks around to the end or to the death of her husband. It's interesting conceptually. I'm not sure that a woman in that situation would stay around, even though she has the ability to protect herself in a sense because she's a woman. I don't know if she'd really want to take that risk of using that type of protection in order to see the death of her husband. But the Gemara assumes that that is the case, that over here she will not be fearful of remaining there to see her husband die, as opposed to the other cases where she would be. It's interesting, in general, Tosafot talks about the fact that women would not be targets of war. I mentioned this yesterday. Only collateral damage. They would be civilians that are killed in war, which, again, today might have changed a little bit because of the rise of terrorism, that women and children are targets of war now, not simply the soldiers that are in battle are not the only people that are the targets of war. Tosafot makes the assumption that they would only be killed as collateral damage. They would never be killed as directed fire against them. But because we're in a heat of war, there's no way for them to control where the arrows go, where the catapults go, and therefore she could be killed just by sticking around here. So she runs away. Over here by the listim, where she feels like it's a much more contained situation, she's able to stay, not fear staying there, and see the death of her husband. Ha'u gavra, the b'shili hilule. There was this individual, it was the end of a wedding party. Itle nura beit ganane. And then at the party place, at the bedroom or wherever they were, a fire went off. So there was a huge fire at the hall in which they had the wedding. Amrahu de Bitu, his wife is screaming, Chazu Gavrai, Chazu Gavrai. You see my husband, you see my husband. And whether she saw him already caught fire, or but she knew he was there, whatever it was, she was screaming out to the individuals there, you gotta get my husband, you gotta get my husband. Atu, they got there. But by the time they got there, there was nothing to salvage. Chazu gavra charucha, deshadi. They found a individual who was burned to a crisp on the ground. Pista diada deshadio. And they also saw a hand that was there, whether it was holding the hand of the other individual or just there, but they found also a hand that was thrown on the ground. So you have two pieces of evidence that are left, a corpse that is completely burnt up, unrecognizable, and you have a hand that is also left over there that is burnt up. So, this is the equivalent of being smoked out of the house, smoked out of a cave. And therefore, it would suggest over here that maybe he did escape. We can't assume that the individual that's here is her husband. So Amarova, Midomi, how do you know that? Hatam loka amra chazu gavrai, chazu gavrai. Number one over there, we don't have her screaming, my husband, who is supposedly in the fire now. So either, again, she saw him on fire, or she saw him, she knew he was in there screaming to get my husband. So in that case, there's one step of evidence that her husband was really in the fire. Number two is, Vod gavra charucha deshadi upista dioda deshadi. Over here you have a corpse that is completely burnt up. There's also evidence of the fact that it probably was her husband that was here. Rav Chiya ben Avin, gavra charucha deshadja. Rav Chiya ben Avin, why does he disagree with what Rav is saying now? Why is he comparing it to the case of being smoked out of the house or smoked out of the cave and saying that maybe the husband survived? We have a corpse here, and we have a lot of evidence that it's probably her husband who was the late stayer at the party. Let us say what happened here was, he was caught in the fire, and another person came down to save him. And the person that came down caught fire, and was caught up in the fire. And then what happened was that the hand, or his palm of his hand, got caught up in the fire. Itliya v'itle be muma. And because of the fire, it caught fire and it caused a mum, meaning that he lost his hand in this process. Umachmat kisufa azlo v'arak le'alma. But because he's so embarrassed, he took off. Why? He was caught up in the fire. Another individual came to save him, and the one who came to save him got caught in the fire. So it's his fault that the other person died, and he survived because the other person died, and he's so embarrassed about that he runs away. Now, he could be running away for two reasons. One, because of what I just described, or he could be running away now because he lost a hand, and he's also embarrassed about the mum. But those two things cause him to be embarrassed, and he runs away. So maybe the body that we're looking at here is not her husband. It's the savior that's there. Her husband's hand might be there, unrecognizable at this point, but her husband's hand, but he took off because he's embarrassed about the whole circumstance that took place over here. So that's why Rabbi Chiya ben Avin says it's the same thing as being smoked out of the house or the cave, where maybe miraculously he left, because maybe we assume that someone else replaced him as the person that died in the fire. Yibailu. So now the Gemara asks, Eid Echad b'milchama mahu. What is the din of an Eid Echad in milchama? Now, as far as testimony with regards to the death of a husband, we've seen earlier in the Masechta the woman is believed about the death of her husband. And we also have seen that an Eid Echad is Naaman with regards to the death of her husband. So here you have two parties that are both believed about the death of her husband, even though normally they should not have Nemanut. Now we come into the Milchama. In the Milchama, we already said the woman is not believed because Medudami law. She draws conclusions without fact because of the circumstances that are present. So therefore, we know by the woman, no longer Nemanut. How about the Eid Echad? How does the Eid Echad function in Milchama? Do we say that what's the reasoning behind the Eid Echad? Is Mehemen, is believed. Mishom, the Milta Davida Ligluyehu, lo Mishakir. Things that eventually will come to light, a person does not lie about. So over here, if he testifies about the fact that the husband died, that's something that eventually will come to be known, because if the husband's really alive, he might show up. And if he shows up, this aide is going to look like a fool if he testified about the fact that her husband died, and then he shows up 2 weeks later, he shows up a month later, even 3 months later. So here, people don't lie when they know they're going to be caught in the lie. Right? Not always so true, but people, we're assumed, don't lie when they think they're going to get caught, and therefore that's why the Eid Echad is Naaman. And that would be true in this case as well. Over here, he's not going to lie, because once the war passes, But once the information clears, the husband might show up, so there's no reason to testify to his death unless you really believe he was dead. Oh, Dilma. Or maybe the reason here is that she looks into the information carefully, and that's why we believe him. I mean, that together with his testimony and the smichut on the wife to check into the information carefully, those two pieces together are what grant the ne'emanut to the aid. It's not the aid himself that gives us the information, but the aid echad together with this chazaka that a woman looks into the information carefully, that's what grants us the ne'emanut over here. V'ocho kevan de zimnin de sanyele. But over here, sometimes it hates him. Lodaika umintzaba. She won't check it out so well, and she'll get married. Now, there's a lot of controversy over here by the different Rishonim as to what this tzad is by the aid. Right? Do we suspect, the basic question here is, do we suspect the aid of doing the same thing that the woman does? Or is the suspicion here about the woman herself? In the case of the sheker, we're just saying that the aid won't lie because he knows it'll come to light the information. So just like in the case before where there was no war, we'll say the same thing by war. Over here by war, what's the problem with the woman? The problem with the woman is that she'd be the dummy law. That she will presume information conclusions without really checking it out because of the circumstances that surround them. So now the question about the aid is the question here on the aid or on the woman? Do we assume here that the aid will do the same thing as the woman, which is that he will draw conclusions without clear evidence? And that's what we're worried about here. That's how some of the Rishonim approach it. That the problem here is, do we assume the aid does the same thing the woman does? He doesn't stick around to see the end. And therefore he comes and testifies to us with certainty about things that are only circumstantial evidence or based on the structure of what he saw in the battle. So then do we suspect him of the same error that the woman makes? Or do we assume that the aid always only gives you conclusive evidence? The only question is, does the woman over here, we said before that the woman's believed together with the aid because she looks into the information very carefully. But over here, the woman will be sumech on the aid and do the dummy law. She will then draw conclusions over here without going into the information carefully because of the circumstances that the aid brings us. So that's it. What's this question here is whether the question is on the aid himself. That's what the Gemara wants to know. Or is the question on the woman together with the aid? Does the woman now do the same thing she does in Milchama? You can see that in Tosafot. Tosafot over here. Time of day, Echad Nema, Mishum De, Milta, David, Gruy, Lo Meshachar, Achanami, Lo Meshachar, Velo Yomar, Bidadami, Kevin, the Dover, Ye, Galui. And he won't say something that is inconclusive, meaning that he doesn't have conclusive evidence, but say it anyway, because it'll come into light. Oh, Dilma, time of the Nema, Mishum De, Daiko, Mitzvah, Achalo, Daiko, Klomar, the Olam, Lo Yomar, Echad, Bidadami. We assume that an Eid Echad never does that. An Eid Echad will only testify of exactly what he saw. Kama Isha Atzma, just like the woman herself. We don't believe him. He says something truthful. He says exactly what he saw. The woman's not going to be so careful here. She will rely on this aid more than a normal case where the aid says he died on his deathbed. Down on his deathbed, she checks out. She wants to know exact circumstances, what happened. An aid comes and says it was a battle and he was dead in the battle. She's going to say, okay, I mean, what's there to ask anymore? There was a battle. There was a war. He definitely died there. Gave him the Eshra Glaim Lidavar, because there's huge circumstantial evidence to the fact that he died, knowing that he was in the battle, knowing that everybody else died in the battle, so we should assume that he died. Havayin the phrase, shal dilma time of day to chad mishum de daika, vafilu bid amar bid dami neman. Not because that the aid, don't think it's because the aid here does things like the woman does. Don't think the reason here is that the aid says bid the dami lay. He doesn't draw conclusions, he doesn't testify only about certain facts. He testifies even about things that are reglined with our circumstantial evidence. Don't say that about the aid. The aid, for sure, only gives us conclusive evidence, only gives us evidence about exactly what he saw. The question is about the woman. The fact that Tosafot says that, you know, means there are other Rishonim that say otherwise, which is that the Rif and other Rishonim believe over here that the Bidomilei is about the aid himself. The question about the believability of the aid, because he'll do the same thing the woman does in war, which is not wait around to see the end, and just testify that, look, this was the circumstance, and I really believe that he died in the war. So that's the question here around this Eid Echad, and again, about the nature of the question, you can see the Gra has the Aleph here that tells you that the Girsa changes based on which conclusion you think, as well as the next piece of the Kevin de Zimni Yisani Le, the Daika Mintzibah, also over there, the Reshal changes the Girsa there because of whether you say that she's saying bididami, or whether you're saying the aid is bididami. So those changes in Girsaot are based on these different positions of the Rishonim. Amarami Cham Bachama. Tashma. Amarabi Kiva. Kshirati le Narda, the Abera Shana. But I went down to Narda to be Ma'aber the Shana. Now, you're not allowed to intercalate the calendar in Chutz La'aretz. It has to be done in Eretz Yisrael. Over here, they're doing it in Narda, which is Chutz La'aretz. Also, Rabbi Akiva is traveling to Chutz La'aretz. We knew that Rabbi Akiva traveled west to Rome. We knew that. But it didn't have so much evidence that he traveled east as well. Here's a case where he traveled eastward. He traveled to Narda, to Babel. So the answer, Tosafa mentions it over here, is that when you are the greatest individual of your generation, and you would be needed to intercalate the calendar, then if you're in Chutz La'aretz, that's where the calculation is going to be done. And Tosfot brings evidence to that, that there are other cases where we have individuals who did it in Chutz La'aretz because they were the greatest leader at the time. So the reason they're doing it in Narda is because Rabbi Akiva is in Narda. So then he says, Matzati Nechemya Ish Beit Dali. I found Nechemya, the man of the drawing bucket. V'amarli Shamati She'in Mesin Et Aisha Be'eretz Yisrael Piyad Echad. He says, I heard that nobody in Eretz Yisrael allows a woman to get married based on the testimony of one aid, other Rabbi Yehuda ben Balva. Except for Rabbi Yehuda ben Balva, he's the only one who allows these women to get married with one aid's testimony. V'namti lo kena dvarim. And I responded to him, you're right. That's exactly what goes on in Eretz Yisrael. Amar li, emor lehem mishmi, Nechemya ish beit li says to Rabbi Akiva, tell them over in my name, atem yodim amidina zu mishubeshet v'gaisot. You know that this area is dangerous. Kach mikublani mi Rabbi Gamliel Azakain. This is what I have as evidence or mesora from Rabbi Gamliel Azakain. Shmesina isha piyed echad. That you're allowed to marry off a woman al piyed echad. Now Gemara says, my midina mishubeshe begaisot. What was that little interlude there that said that the roads are very dangerous? So lav afagav d'minina zu mishubeshet kach mikublani. Is he saying that that was the case with regards to Rabbi Gamliel? I mean, that's part of the information about the Masorah. He says, I have a Kabbalah that you know, even though the roads are dangerous to travel, nevertheless, this is what Rabbi Gamliel HaZakein said, Shemesin al pi'ed echad, that you marry up based on an eid echad, Alma, eid echad ne'eman. So there you see that Rabbi Gamliel HaZakein is saying that eid echad is ne'eman, even in the face of war. So Amarava, Yihachi, Maishna Medina Zu. Why is it saying this country or this state is like that? Komakom sheyesh gaisot mibayilei. Should have been any place. It should have been said in a generic statement, not as a particular statement about this location. Know that you know that for me, where I am from Narda to get to Eretz Yisrael, is a dangerous trip. I can't leave my household and come before the Rabbanan to tell them what I have, kach mikublani mi Rabbi Gamliel, shmesin isha b'yed echad, that I have this Masorah from Gamliel Zakein, that you're allowed to marry off based on one aid. So it wasn't that that was part of the Masorah, but that was rather his reasoning for why he personally can't come up and testify to this fact, is because it's dangerous. There are militias running around over here. He's afraid to leave his family alone in Narda, so therefore he wants to stay back to protect his family and take care of his family. So he says to Rabbi Akiva, I want you to tell over the testimony on my behalf. Please take this information back that Messiah al Pied Echad, you're allowed to marry off based on Eid Echad, but no evidence about the fact of whether Eid Echad is Neman b'milchoma or not. Tashma, another case. Maseh b'shnei talmidei chachamim shayu ba'im im Abba Yossi ben Simai b'sfina. So there were two talmidei chachamim traveling alongside of Abba Yossi ben Simai in a boat v'tava. The boat sunk. V'sei Rebbe nishutoyem al pi nashim. And Rebbe married off their wives by the testimony of women. V'ha mayim kemilchama damu. Water is like war, which is that nobody escapes, in one sense. And if you don't see the people escaping, there's likelihood that they did not escape. And number two is, it's something where people make the dummy. People assume. If they don't see anybody coming up, that means that they're gone. V'nashim afilu me'ah ke'erecha damu. And no matter, he said they did it al pi nashim, which is multiple women, but it doesn't really matter. No matter how many women you have, that's no different than a single aid coming and testifying. Viktani heisi. And you see that Rabbi, based on their testimony, was willing to marry them off. So you have eid echad in the face of milchama, and Rabbi is saying, no problem, marry them off. But Tizbara, wait a minute, is that really what happened over here? Mayim shein lem sof ninhu. This is water that has no end to it. Now, what is water that has no end to it? Water that has no end to it is that if you look in all four directions, You cannot see the shoreline on all four directions. If there's any direction that you look and you cannot see the shoreline, that's mayim she'en lahem sof. That's waters that have no end, because you have no visibility around you to see every bank that is around this water body. So mayim she'en lahem sof, ishto asura. Wait a minute. If that's the case, then his wife would be problematic. How did Rabbi marry off his wife? We're talking about water here that had no end, because our assumption is that the individual could have gotten out, escaped, swam to shore, and then taken off, and he started a new life somewhere. Because you can't see the shorelines, you're not certain that he didn't come out on one of the shorelines that you couldn't see. You have no idea that he escaped from this and swam or survived the shipwreck. You cannot give definitive evidence that, to certainty, that he didn't come out of the water. All you can say is, yeah, it sunk. It didn't look like there were any survivors, but you can't say for certainty he didn't survive. Unless you have a body there, then you could tell that he survived. El Eichi Dami. So then what was the case here that he believed him? De Amrei Askinu Kaman. They pulled him out in front of us. Vichazinu the altar. And we saw them right away. Vikamrei Simonim. And then they gave Simonim about it. Well, so the case here is that they pulled the bodies out of the water. Now, as Tosfos points out of here, the Mar here says the altar right away. That we saw them right away. The right away over here has to do with after they pulled them out of the water. They don't have to pull them out of the water right away. When they're in the water, they can stay in the water for a long time. The Gemara later on is going to say that bodies in the water basically preserve their basic integrity. So therefore, in the water, the body actually constricts and maintains its general form. Once you take the body out of the water, then as Tosfot says, it starts to mitpach. It starts to expand. It starts to swell. And therefore, you could lose evidence or simanim or recognition of the individual. So over here, Tosfot says, the altar means we saw them immediately after they were pulled out of the water. Not that they were necessarily pulled out of the water right away, but we saw their bodies right after they were pulled out of the water. So when we looked at them, we knew what we were looking at. We could give you evidence of that. And they saw simanim. They gave signs about these individuals that made us sure that they were these individuals. Now, Rashi disagrees and says the altar refers to the water itself, and that they have to get them out of the water quickly, because if they don't get them out of the water quickly, then there will be a deterioration in the integrity of the individual, and therefore they can no longer testify about who it was. And so the altar refers to the removal from the water, not them, as Tosfot seeing it right after they came out of the water. The Tosfot Yishanim has also a version of Tosfot's explanation, and they say that if they see it immediately, then they can testify for certainty about the individual. But if it happens after a period of time, it's not clear. When he says here a period of time, that means that they took it out of the water after a period of time, or the person was out of the water for a period of time, then they would start to be bedomila. They'll start to say, yeah, you know, quite, it looks like that person, it must be that person, and they will come to conclusions for it because of circumstantial evidence. And therefore, that's why the Gemara says here, la'alter, that it happened immediately. Because, delo alayu samchinen ela simanim. The reason that we believe these women is not because of what they say, but because of the simanim that they bring. Those simanim are evidence, and if there are simanim muvhakim, then we would believe them d'oraita according to everyone. If they were not simanim muvhakim, then we would believe them according to one who says that simanim are d'oraita. So over here we say that the simanim are what govern over here, it's not the women's testimony, and therefore you're not back to this evidence about Eid Echad. Tosfot over here discusses something about simanim, which is true in Baba Metzia with regards to an Aveda, which is, with regards to an Aveda, we allow people to use Tviyat Ayin, which is that a certain person has a certain amount of recognition or familiarity with an object. And if they are a person that is Naaman in general, if they are a believable or trustworthy person, well, you can say to him, with a Tviyat Ayin, that is definitely my object. Even without a Siman Muvhak in it, they can say, that was my object. Question is, does that apply over here? Can the women testify to the fact that these were definitely these two Tamei Chachamim, based on Tviyat Ayin? Say, look, I'm very familiar with this guy. I definitely know who it was, and I looked at him, I was certain that was him. Are we allowed to use it? So Tosfot at first says, no, that here you need real simanim, avayidei tviyat ayin ein lahaminam, we do not believe them. At the end, Tosfot says, inami mahani api tviyat ayinam. Maybe at the end he says that tviyat ayin would work over here. So Tosfot plays both sides. It has to do with that sugya and Baba Metzia and how strong a siman you need, whether you need simanim b'chakim or simanim in general considered to be do'raita. But that also might play a role here in what's called tviyat ayin, the ability of a person to say, I know, without giving you any direct simanim, and just say, I saw them and I know for sure it was them. Is that enough evidence in this case? Okay, Yahu Gavra, Da'afkid Shumshume Gabi Chavrei. This individual deposited sesame by his friend. Amalei Habli Shumshume says, give me back my sesame that I deposited with you. Amalei Shekotinu. He says, I gave them back to you. So the depositor says, listen, weren't there this quantity or this weight of the item? And it was inside of a barrel. And he, sure enough, he has a barrel with that amount in it. He goes, go check the barrel downstairs. I'm telling you, the barrel has exactly that weight in it. Sure enough, they go downstairs and the barrel has that weight in it. But he says, I'm late. The dach shall continue. You took yours already. And what's here is new stuff. This is my stuff or this is someone else's stuff. This isn't your stuff. You took your stuff out already. Even though the circumstance or the objects are exactly like what he suggested he left here. So Rav Chisda says, this is like two Talmidei Chachamim, the case that we just said over here. And we don't say that these two are the ones that disappeared and now these are two different individuals, two different bodies that we pulled out. When we pulled out the bodies, we assume that these two Talmidei Chachamim are the bodies that we pulled out. And we don't assume they got swapped out with somebody else. I'm like, Rova, mi domi. What's the comparison? Hotam kamrei simonim. Over there, by the bodies, they gave simonim as to who these Talmidei Chachamim were. So they give us evidence of who they were. How could you suggest that they were swapped out when they gave us simonim? Where it says, hacha shumshumei my simono itlohu. Over here, how are sesame seeds differentiated from other sesame seeds? I mean, you have no evidence that these are your sesame seeds versus someone else's sesame seeds. All sesame seeds look the same. So if that's the case, just because they have the same weight doesn't mean that these are yours versus someone else's. Even though, as Tosafot points out, in the Gemara of Metzia, Mido Mishkal is a siman. Weight and measurement are considered to be simanim. If a person gives you the exact weight or the exact measurement that's there, generally those are assumed to be simanim. So now, over here, why isn't this a good enough siman in order to say that the shumshumei are his? So Tosfot says over here, "Hotam mayri b'inyan shein derech ben adam le'tznia." Avahocha derech ben adam le'tznia b'midu zu. Tosfot says over there, it was either a non-standard size or people don't deposit stuff. So it was unusual there, the case. The weight or the measurement and all that information was something that was considered to be out of the ordinary. And so if he gave that information, that was considered to be a siman. But over here, he gave him over standard size. And since they gave him standard size, that's not really a siman because anybody would give it over in that standard size, and that's why he does not consider it to be a siman over here. Udgamar chen b'chein havyon. So if he says this and this much where they were, emer chushban itrame, he landed with the right number, meaning that he assumed that that was the weight because that's exactly what happens in any case. So therefore, the new person put in the same weight as the old person took out. So amalei mark shicha bar Rav Chisda Rav Ashi umi chashina and shem epinan. Is that true that we really believe, worry about the fact that somebody took them away and these are exact same stuff that replaced them? That if we have a situation which we're looking at something that should be belonging to this depositor, but we just say, no, you know what, they got swapped out. Over here, the shomer is saying that I swapped them out or you took them back and I put new ones there. But in general, do we worry about the fact that you can have an item that's there and swapped out for exactly the same item? But don't we have a tanan? We have a mishnah in Maisu Sheni. Matza kli v'katuv alav kuf. If he finds a kli and written on it is etched in a kuf, that means korban. Mem, that means maser. Dalit means dimua, mix of truma and chulin. Tet, tevel. Tav, truma. Shebishat ha-sakana, kutvim tav, taka truma. Why are they just writing the first letter instead of the whole word? Not because they're lazy, but because it was shat sakana when they weren't allowed to keep the mitzvot. So they used to write on the utensils a letter to indicate what was in the utensil in order so that people would know what was in there. Here we see if you find a kli that's written on it with a letter, you assume that what's in the kli is exactly what's written on it. How come you don't say, oh, whatever was in it was used up already, and now this is new stuff that's inside of it, so it's not a korban anymore, it's not hekdesh, it's not truma, it's not tevel, whatever's here is new. So amalei ravina d'ravashi v'lo chashina n'shem epinan. So now he says, the other way, we don't worry about the fact that they got swapped out. We're going to bring a Mishnah to the other side. Ema Seifa. The latter half over there says, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Afilu Matzach Chavit V'Katuv Alei Truma. Here he finds a barrel and Truma is written on it. Harei Elu Chulin. That's considered to be Chulin. Shani Omer, Eshtekar Av Amalei Truma. That last year was filled of Truma, Upina. And now he emptied it out. Here you clearly have a Mishnah that gives evidence in both directions. One is the evidence of the fact that we assume whatever was written on the barrel is what's there. And then we have another one that says, no, what's written on the barrel is not what's there. We assume it got swapped out. Ella, the kuli alma chashinan shema pinan. Everybody agrees we worry about being swapped out. Now what are they arguing about over here? Mar savar mi im ita de pinu michbar havi kafar. Because over here, if he had taken them out, he would have wiped out the letters. The letter there indicates what's in there. So if you took out whatever's in there, you would have erased the letter that's there. Therefore, if the letter's still there, the assumption is that whatever's in there is still what's written on the barrel. Because if he had taken it out, he would have erased the letter. The other one says, no, maybe he did take it out, and he forgot. He made a mistake. He forgot to erase the letter. He was busy taking the stuff out. He didn't erase the letter. Or, he did it for protection. This goes back to the Mishnayot and Nidarim, that people sometimes lie about what's in the barrel to protect it from thieves and from robbers. We saw that in the Gemara and Nidarim, that all of a sudden robbers show up in the house, and he takes a ned there that everything here is Hekdesh. Or this belongs to Hekdesh. Oh, robbers go, Hekdesh? We won't touch that. And off they go. They won't take it. So it was a way to protect his stuff because they had respect for Bin Adam the Makom, not for Bin Adam the Chaviro. So if it was yours, they would take it. If it belonged to Hekdesh, from God, we don't steal from God. We only steal from other people. So to over here, if he keeps the letter tough on it and says it's Truma, then nobody's going to touch it because it's considered to be Truma. So it has a tough on it. Maybe it's not Truma. But he left the tuff on there because if it's Truma, people won't take from it, won't steal from it, so it was his way of protecting the items. So the reason he left the letter on is not because what's in here is still Truma, but rather because there was value to having the tuff on the item. Or again, he maybe made a mistake and he left it there. Just to know that they found in Yerushalayim when they excavated in like the burnt house area and stuff like that, they actually found utensils with these letters carved on them that indicate the kuf and the tuff. That indicated Korban and Truma, and so on and so forth. They actually found things that have these letters etched into them. Yitzchak, Reish Galuta, Bar Achted Rabibi. Yitzchak, the exilarch, Bar Achted, the nephew of Rabibi, of Ka'azam Kurtova, Lasfamia. He was going from, I don't know if that's Cordova, or Cordova to Asfamia to Spain. He was definitely on a long journey, far out in the Mediterranean, pretty far west in the Mediterranean, where they would have considered the end of the civilized world at that time. The Shochiv, and he dies. Shalchu mi'atam, so they send word from the wherever he is. Obviously, it took a long time for this information to get back home. Yitzchak reish galuta barachted rabibi hava ka'azam ikutuva l'asfami v'shochiv. They send him all this information. He was traveling, and he passed away. Michai shinan l'trei Yitzchak olo. Do we worry about the fact that maybe there's another person with this same name? And therefore, what is being said here, we can't guarantee is the husband of whoever this woman is. And we don't assume that he's passed away. Because maybe there was a different Yitzchak that passed away. And they're sending the information. Even though they sent pretty detailed information, which is that he's the Yitzchak, the nephew of this individual, who was the Reish Galuta, who was traveling from such and such a location. Nevertheless, they're saying maybe there was a different Yitzchak that they were talking about. The Rashba suggests that the term Reish Galuta or Reish Gola was not a term reserved for those people in Bavel, but for anybody who is considered to be the equivalent of the exilarch in a location of the Gola. So it might have been over here that this Yitzchak Reish Galuta wasn't the Reish Galuta with a capital T, but rather the Reish Galuta of Cordova. And that's why in Narda they had no idea who he was, or they were not familiar with him, and that's why they were worried over here. On the other hand, the Alshach says that actually this case had no safek about it. The reason that they raised the question is because they said, what would have happened if we didn't get all this information that was sent? And if we didn't have all this information, then what would be the halacha? So they used this as a springboard for the halacha, but the question did not revolve around this exact case. Abaye Amar Chashinan. Abaye says we do worry about it. Rav Amar Lo Chashinan, we don't worry about it. Amar Abaye Minaya Minalo. How can I prove to you that in these cases we do worry about it? There was this get that was found in Narda. And written in the get is, Bitzad Klonia Mato, I'm next to the city of Klonia, Ana I. Now, here we have in our Gersas Adrulonai. If you look in the Gersa on the Mesorot HaShas, brings down, Ana David Bar Nihalai, which would make a lot more sense. Adrulonai sounds like a Greek name, not a Jewish name. So he says that the name is actually David Bar Nihalai, and it got squished together and contracted over here. He says, I, so-and-so, Narda, from the city of Narda, Patrit, Vitarachit Yad Plonit, Intadi. I free, dismiss, release my wife. Bishalcha, Avua de Shmuel, the Kamei, the Rabbi Yehuda Nisia. So Avua de Shmuel sends this to Rabbi Yehuda Nisia to figure out whether this is a good get and we can rely on it or not. Now, Rabbi Yehuda Nisia over here is very interesting because In general, when the Gemara uses Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya, that is Rabbi's grandson, the Amora, Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya. Now, if he's found in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya, or Rabbi Yehuda Nasi would be, is Rabbi Yehuda Nasi Rabbi. But then they wouldn't have used Nisiya because that's the Aramaic version. They would have used Nasi, which is the Hebrew version of it. So over here you have Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya, which is obviously talking about Rabbi because Avu Deshmo is a contemporary of Rabbi. So it would be unlikely that he was sending this to Rabbi's grandson because Avu Deshmo is a peer of Rabbi's. So the likelihood is he's sending it to Rabbi, and this Rabbi Yehuda Nasi over here is Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, Rabbi, not the grandson of Rabbi. V'shalach le tivadek narda kula. And he says, go check the entire narda to make sure there's nobody else named Adrulonai or David Barni Eli. Make sure there's nobody else with this name in narda. If there's nobody else with this name, go ahead and let his wife get married. She's definitely divorced. So here we are, choshesh for someone with the same name. He tells him, check the whole narda. V'rava amar im ita, Yivadei kol olam ibayle. You should have checked the whole world, because if you're worrying about when in Narda, worry about the fact that there was a guy living in Narda, moved out of Narda now. How do you know he's still living here? Maybe he lived here, maybe he left, maybe there's a guy who used to live here and he moved to Italy now. And now you have to go find out that this guy has the same name. Basically, the answer is simple. She can get married. We're not choshesh for this. But he didn't want to embarrass Avu Deshmuel to send back and say there's no question here. Because he sent the question. The fact that Avu Deshmuel sent the question meant that he had some safek about it. So he wanted not to embarrass him, so he sent him back and says, do a little work over there. So it looks like there was a real question. But there wasn't really a question, and that's, he just gave him something to do to show that it was, Avu Deshmuel was really okay. So, Amarova mina aminala. How can I prove to you that I'm right? That you don't worry about this. There were these two credit documents, bonds, that basically showed up in Mechuzah. V'ninai bar Chavi. And they're written in them that the creditors are this Chavi bar Ninai, v'ninai bar Chavi. V'agbehu Rabba bar Avua. Rabba bar Avua used them to take Zuze, to collect money. Ha Chavi bar Ninai, v'ninai bar Chavi, m'chuzah shchichei tuva. That was a very common name in Mechuzah. It was one of the favorite names that were given to children. Chavi and Anai. So there were a lot of Chavi and Anais in Mechuzah. How do you know that the creditor who's holding this document is really the owner of the bond that is here? He's coming along, he wants to collect based on his credit document, and it says in it his name, which is Chavi bar Ninai, or Ninai bar Chavi. But on the other hand, there's another five guys with that same name now, so how do you know that he's really the creditor that owns this document? Now Rashi and Tosafot both ask over here a very important question, which is, Rava is bringing proof here from a din in Mamononot to a din in Isur. How can you bring evidence from something that we do by Mamononot to something that we do by Isur? So Rashi says, Kevin Delinia Mamona, Afagab Duchuksuko Lo Cheshinan. That's why the case here in Mamon is that even though we know for certain there are other people with that name in the city, we are not Choshesh. So by Dine Mamononot, even though we know for certain there are other people with this name, we are not Choshesh. Therefore, the Inan Isura, Kilohuksuko Mia Lo Cheshinan. Therefore, by Isura, where we don't know for certain that there's someone else with that name, over there we will not be choshesh. So Rashi says that we're able to make that leap from Mamon to Isur because we're actually downgrading what we're saying in Isur versus Mamon. By Mamon we would say even though we know the names of the individuals and we know that people have this name in the city, nevertheless he's believed. By Isur, if we knew there were two people with that name, we wouldn't believe him. But here we don't even know there's another person with that name in the city, therefore you don't have to check to find out that there is someone with that name in the city, and because of that, that's why he says Lo Cheshinan. Lo Cheshinan, when we don't know, or I don't have evidence of the fact, there's no reason to believe that's the case, because even by Mamon, where you do know we don't Choshesh, then certainly by Isur, where we don't know, we're not going to be Choshesh. So Abaye, so what's Abaye going to do to undermine this proof of Rabba? L'may Nichushla. What should we worry about? In Ifilo, if he's going to drop the document, Mizhar Zarir Bey. He's going to be very careful not to drop the document, because he knows if he loses this document, he's not getting it back because there are five other guys with the same name as him. So he drops the document and somebody else finds it. There's no way he's going to have evidence to get this document back. So therefore, he's very careful about it. Tosafot points out that in the Gemara in Baba Batra, that Abaye has a position that when you have a contract that is picked up by another individual, he has to bring a proof that it was actually his and that he got it, because we worry about Nefila and Pikadon. Exact opposite of what he says over here. Here he says we don't worry about Nefila and Pikadon. There he says we do worry about it. So Tosfot says it's the difference between Nefila de Rabim and Nefila de Yochid. That we worry about when a document is dropped in a public place, And then the guy ends up with it. Then we worry about the fact that it was picked up by a different person and it wasn't transferred ownership. On the other hand, when you have an individual who is taking a document who has the same name, that one guy had this name and you assume that, oh, the other guy came and picked it up and he had the exact same name, that we don't worry about nefila l'kazot. That type of falling or being dropped, we don't worry about, because there, the chances that the guy with the exact same name picked up the document that was lost with the guy with the same name, that's unlikely. We don't worry about that type of nefila or that type of lost document. When it's lost in a public place, then we start to worry about ownership over the document. He does worry about nefila, that it would be dropped. But he worries about it dropped when the question of being dropped is that the person says, I found this document in the middle of the shuk, and now we want to give it back to the owner. There we worry about nefila. Over here, where the worry is that he dropped it and another guy with his name picked it up, that we're not going to worry about. That's a far-fetched case. That's what he's saying. Ili pikadon, if he's going to deposit it with another party, came into shmei kishmei lo mafkid gabei. He won't put this document next to someone who has the same name. If it's deposited with an individual, he only deposits with someone who doesn't have the same name, so they can't pull the shtar out on another individual and be goveya based on that shtar. So my amart, so what's left that could happen over here? Dilma Masale. Maybe he gave it over to another party. He says, listen, I have this bearer bond over here. Happens to have my name in it, but you have the same name as me. So he gives him the shtar and he says, you go ahead. Now it's yours to use. You can go and collect with this shtar. Well, that's not a problem either, because otziot niknot mimisira. You can transfer ownership of a credit document simply by giving it over. That's the kinyan that allows for a transference of whatever credit is in this document. You can transfer through simple handing over the bond. So if you have a bearer bond, you can hand it to the next party and he can collect based on it. Here, this is equivalent of a bearer bond because everybody has the same name. So all these people have the same name. You could hand it to him and he could collect because it's now his bond. He now becomes the creditor over here. So Baya says, Mimonav Shach, what are we worried about in this case? Why are we worried about this individual collecting with his document? There's no reason to believe that it's not his document. He wouldn't have dropped it. He wouldn't have deposited it. So what? He traded, he gave it to someone else. They have the right to collect with it. So it's not a problem at all. He should be able to collect with it. Now, Baya's answer is so strong that over here, Tosfot discusses what exactly is going on over here. And he says, what's Rava going to say to this? Abaye happens to be right. In the end, Tosfot comes to the conclusion that Rava must hold that ein otiot niknot misira, that otiot cannot be transferred through simple passing of the document, and therefore Rava believes over here that there's a risk that the document was passed, and that would be problematic. Otherwise, what's the proof for Rava over here? Because Abaye really has strong answers against all these points, which is, we wouldn't suspect it fell, because he's going to be very careful. We won't suspect that he left it as a pikadon with somebody of his name. And otiot niknot misira, who cares that he's showing up? It's his name, it's a document, why should we worry at all? So Tosfot says it must be that Rava holds that you can't transfer such a document. And that's why if we're collecting on it, it must mean that we believe that this is the original owner of the document, and we don't worry about the fact that there are other people with the same name. And that's his proof here, the lo chayshina, that we don't worry about these circumstances. All right, we'll stop here. Four lines down on Kuf Tet Zayin Amud Aleph.